Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
And now we enlighten you with Ayah 35 to 37 of Surah Ali Imran, recited by Shahriyar Parhizgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Dhurriyatan ba'dha min ba'din wallahu samiyun alim. إذ قالت امرأة عمران رب إني نذرت لك ما في بطني محررا فتقبل مني إنك أنت السميع العليم فلما وضعتها قالت رب إني وضعتها أنثى والله أعلم بما وضعت وليس الذكر كالأنثى وإني سميتها مريم وإني أعيذها بك وذريتها من الشيطان الرجيم فتقبلها ربها بقبول حسن وأنبتها نباتا حسنا وكفلها زكريا كلما دخل عليها زكريا المحراب وجد عندها رزقا قال يا مريم أنى لك هذا قالت هو من عند الله إن الله يرزق من يشاء بغير حساب.
In the name of Allah, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. When the wife of Imran said, My Lord, dedicate to you what is in my belly in consecration, accept it from me. Indeed, you are the All-Hearing, the All-Knowing. And when she bore her, she said, My Lord, I have borne a female child, and Allah knew better what she had borne. And the female is not like the male. I've named it Mary, and I commend her and her offspring to your care against evil of the outcast Satan. Thereupon her Lord accepted her with a gracious acceptance and made her grow up in a worthy fashion, and he charged Zechariah with her care. Whenever Zechariah visited her in the sanctuary, he would find provision with her. He said, O Mary, from where does this come for you? She said, It comes from Allah. Allah provides whomever He wishes without any reckoning.
Welcome back, dear listeners. You're listening to Iran Radio, and I'm your host, Asma. I hope you have enjoyed our program up until now. Up next, we have news keeping you updated with the latest headlines. Then we have Radio Productions, delivering another wave of informative content curated just for you by our dedicated team. Next up, the Ocean of Da'at dives deep into spiritual supplications. In this program, we reflect on the rich spiritual heritage of Islamic supplications and ziyarat texts passed down from the Ahlul Bayt as beautifully preserved in dua collections like Mafatih al-Jinan. Each episode offers a brief yet meaningful commentary on selected du'as and ziyarat. Following that, another segment of Radio Productions, we've put together a variety of engaging pieces for your listening enjoyment. Discover something new with us. Stay tuned for the news, please.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
World Health Organization warns about Gaza's deteriorating health conditions, and most of the territory's hospitals and health centers are partially functioning. Iran's foreign minister says Tehran never trusted Washington as honest negotiator, stressing that no one can fully trust the U.S. And at least two people are killed and eight critically injured in a shooting at Brown University in the U.S. state of Rhode Island. Hello everyone, and a very warm welcome to World News. Our top story, the World Health Organization has issued a stark warning about the situation of the health sector in Gaza following 2 years of Israel's genocide. According to the World Body, 18 of 36 hospitals and 43% of primary health centers in Gaza are partially functioning. According to WHO, there are no more MRI machines available and only two CT CAT scans there to cover a population of over 2 million people. It added there is a severe shortage of essential medicine and medical supplies needed to treat diseases, especially heart and kidney disease, as well as intensive care equipment. The organization said it is facing challenges to bring laboratory material and critical lab machine components into Gaza because Israeli forces are preventing the entry of many items by classifying them as dual use. WHO said the Gaza's humanitarian crisis is worsening amid severe flooding and storm. It said thousands of civilians are sheltering in coastal areas with no drainage or protective barriers. Political analyst Robert Imlichas joined us earlier. He said backed by the U.S., Israel is pursuing a plan for a new Gaza, which includes forced displacement and long-term ethnic cleansing.
What we're seeing right now is that still essential items are restricted. There's flooding that, of course, has just affected over 100,000 tents in the Gaza Strip this past week. Of course, people are dying from all sorts of different ailments. Many are injured and are prevented from leaving or getting the right medical attention. This is all, of course, by design. The Israelis want this chaos. They want this to happen. They're openly looking at a scheme alongside the United States and monitored by the so-called Civil Military Coordination Center to invent what they call a new Gaza. And so the new Gaza will be the territory that where those remaining will be forced to flee to, and the rest then perhaps can be slowly ethnically cleansed. This is one of the potential outcomes that the Israelis are looking for. They don't want for things to go back to normal in Gaza, and they're not going to allow that to happen. And we can see that if they wanted to allow the aid in, they would. Now, the only difference is, during this pause, is that at CMCC, which is composed of 20 countries and over 40 different international organizations, is overseeing everything the Israelis do on a daily basis, including killing civilians, including demolishing buildings, including preventing the aid. It's all well documented. So this CMCC is complicit in the genocide.
And we earlier spoke to our Gaza correspondent Moti Abu Musab to get the latest on Israel's ceasefire violations across the war-ravaged territory.
be the major attack took place today in the western side of Gaza City after the Israeli fighter drones attacked a civilian vehicle in that area near Annabulsi roundabout in that area, killing at least 5 Palestinian civilians. Let me remind you once again that Annabulsi roundabout in the western side of Gaza City witnessed one of the most appalling massacres committed against the starving Palestinians during the genocidal war, when the Israeli occupation forces sprayed those Palestinian people as they were trying to get what to eat, then killing at least 500 Palestinian civilians. Many of them were unfortunately women and children. So what's happening right now is a continuation of those genocidal and deadly attacks the Israeli occupation forces are still insisting on continuing against the Palestinian people. As you have just mentioned, the Israeli regime claims that they have attacked and targeted Ra'a Saad, who was one of, as you know, the most prominent leaders of the Al-Qassam Brigades, the military wing of Hamas movement here in Gaza Strip. He's the second leader of the brigades after Izzeddin al-Haddad, and he had a long history of struggling against the Israeli occupation forces on the ground here, and he was one of the masterminds of October the 7th attack against the Israeli regime.
Now the demonstrators take to the streets of occupied territories, holding another weekly rally to slam the Israeli prime minister's handling of the Gaza war, also demanding that Benjamin Netanyahu be held accountable over the regime's security failures back on October 7, 2023. Protesters said Netanyahu continues to blame everyone for what happened, but is not willing to take any accountability for October 7th of 2023. They also called for a professional commission of inquiry headed by a judge to probe the regime's failures. They slammed Netanyahu's attempt to try to choose the members of that commission, saying it will only give him an unfair advantage and prevent true accountability. They carried signs reading "the rule of law, not the rule of Netanyahu," urging the regime's president to refuse to pardon Netanyahu. Organizers pledged to keep up with their anti-Netanyahu rallies until the remains of the last Israeli captive is returned from Gaza. The United Nations says Israeli forces have forcefully displaced over 1,000 Palestinians in the occupied West Bank since the beginning of this year. According to UN Deputy Spokesperson Farhan Haq, most of the displaced took place in Area C, which comprises approximately 60% of the West Bank and is under full Israeli control. He added displacement came after majority of Palestinian homes were labeled as unauthorized over alleged lack of building permits and then were demolished. The Palestinian residents argue that those construction permits are virtually impossible to get from the Israeli regime officials. Now, his remarks come after the UN reported a rise in Israeli military and settler violence across the West Bank over the past 2 years. Regime forces killed a Palestinian child Saturday in the town of Silat al-Harithiya, west of Jenin. According to locals, Israeli forces fatally shot 16-year-old before abducting his body. And joining us earlier with more on your West Bank update was our Ramallah correspondent, Naka Ahmed.
In 2024, 3,070 Palestinians have also been forcibly displaced from Area C. Most of them are from Bedouin clusters and Bedouin communities all over the occupied West Bank. And this is according to Humanitarian Development Statement number 201 by the UN itself, which stated that the Israeli forces and the Israeli regime are pushing Palestinians very hard to leave the places that they have inhabited for tens of years. And another 1,500 Palestinians are under the dire threat of being forcibly displaced. So 2025 was not much of a change than 2024. And this is something that, unfortunately, as many analysts are seeing, 2026 may have also worse numbers, as of course the Israeli regime is announcing plans and budgets that are directed towards settlement expansion and towards expelling Palestinians out of the occupied territories in the West Bank, especially Area C, which is considered to be the most strategic areas. Most of the water fountains and the water sources are in Area C. Most of the agricultural areas are in Area C. Most of the industrial zones are also in Area C.
to London, where British protesters once again gather outside UK Parliament to condemn the Gaza genocide. Demonstrators say that exposing crimes committed by Israel in the Holy Land are especially relevant this period of the year as the world is going to celebrate the birth of Jesus Christ.
In the midst of the Israeli regime's ongoing genocide in Gaza, a number of protesters have gathered outside the British Parliament to hold a special Christmas service in honour of all those killed in the Holy Land of Palestine. This vigil seeks to combine prayers for the people of Palestine with outrage at the British government's role in supporting the Israeli regime's genocide against those Palestinians. And attendees particularly want to draw attention to the treatment meted out to both Muslims and Christians by the Jewish extremists inside the Netanyahu administration. The protesters say that Western media and political elites deliberately obfuscate the existence of Palestinian Christians to make it easier to demonize the victims of Israel's genocide and label them as terrorists not worthy of being humanized.
There's been a lot of work done to basically depict Muslims as terrorists. No one talks about Christian terrorists or Jewish terrorists. When they think of that word, they automatically think Muslim. So that's why that framing exists right now. But we know Christians live in Palestine. We've had vicars talk about how their churches are being bombed. We know Israel attacks them. Even during last Christmas, I remember how churches were bombed into rubbles.
Members of different religious communities were in attendance to commemorate the victims of the genocide. Jewish pro-Palestinian groups concede that politicians like Bezalel Smotrich and Itamar Ben-Gvir have deep support amongst the Jewish settlers occupying Palestine, with churches and mosques being destroyed by the Zionist Israeli regime in the birthplace of Jesus and hundreds of thousands of people murdered. It will take serious work to break through the pro-Israel propaganda and make wider Christian populations understand what's taking place in Palestine to those they claim are their brethren. Issa Kadhimi, London.
Iran's foreign minister has reiterated the Islamic Republic does not seek war and is willing to solve all existing problems through diplomacy. Abbas Araghchi was speaking in an interview with Al Jazeera's documentary channel. He also touched upon U.S. efforts to obstruct talks on Iran's peaceful nuclear program by demanding that is, that Tehran fully stop uranium enrichment. Araghchi said Iran never trusted the U.S. as honest negotiator and stressed U.S. has never been honest about anything and that no one can in fact trust fully the U.S. Araghchi also referred to rumors about a possibility of a new Israeli attack on Iran, calling them part of psychological warfare to create panic in the country. He also noted that Iran does not totally rule out the possibility, though, but its armed forces and people are fully prepared to confront and defend the country under any conditions. Investigative journalist Rick Sterling was with us earlier. He said U.S. and its ally Israel have a long record of breaching commitments, including violating the nuclear deal with Iran and the Gaza ceasefire.
The U.S. Unfortunately has a long history of deceit and dishonesty. The native people of the United States said that Washington spoke with a forked tongue because whatever agreements were signed by the United States forces were then violated. So the indigenous people lost the land, and many agreements and treaties that were signed with them were just ripped up. In 2015, of course, you had the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action that was involved years of negotiations with Iran, many countries involved. All 15 members of the United Nations Security Council agreed with that, approved it, and then Donald Trump came in and ripped it up in one day. There are many examples going back in history. Of course, Iran has been a victim of the United States. It's not only the United States, of course. It's the United States' chief ally, Israel, is engaged in this as well, where they sign treaties and then they break them at will. Look at the ceasefire in Gaza, which Israel is violating each and every day by not allowing the relief supplies, the humanitarian supplies, the medical supplies that they committed to allowing into Gaza.
At least two students are killed after gunmen opens fire at Brown University in the U.S. state of Rhode Island.
Our focus right now is on supporting the families who have been affected by this, the families of the two students who sadly lost their lives today, as well as the eight, now nine, students who are in the hospital. We've been in touch with their families. I will talk to them soon. But, you know, we will come together as a community and we'll get through this.
Nine people were also injured. Officials say six victims are in critical but stable condition, while one remains in critical condition. Police have released surveillance footage showing a man believed to be the suspect. Shooter remains at large and residents have been urged to stay indoors. More than 400 law enforcement officers are involved in the search, and the incident comes amid a surge in gun violence with more than 70 school shootings reported in the U.S. so far this year. And Germany's reportedly exploring creation of a so-called return centers outside the European Union to transfer illegal immigrants whose asylum requests were rejected and those who can't be deported. According to a German newspaper, Tunisia has been mentioned among potential destination countries, despite Tunisia's repeated rejection of playing any kind of role as a migration buffer for Europe.
Germany's migration debate is taking a new turn. According to Bild, Berlin is considering outsourcing part of its migration management by establishing return centers beyond European Union borders. Tunisia and Uganda have been listed among potential locations, although no official request has been made and Tunis was not consulted. The proposal remains exploratory and does not specifically target Tunisian nationals. Experts warn that such initiatives raise question of legality, sovereignty, and the ethics of outsourcing Europe's migration challenges. Tunisian authorities have repeatedly rejected these approaches. President Kais Saied and lawmakers insist Tunisia will not become a transit or resettlement country for irregular migrants. Europe sees Tunisia as a buffer, but Tunis stresses it must be treated as a sovereign partner, not as an extension for Europe's external borders. While nearly 1,800 Tunisians were deported from Germany between 2018 and 2025, these case-by-case returns are unrelated to the proposed return centers, which still lack legal and diplomatic approval.
As Europe looks beyond its borders for migration solutions, Tunisia draws a clear line with no consultation or legal basis. The potential establishment of return centers underscores the growing tensions over sovereignty. Iskandar Nawar, Tunis.
And that's it for your latest, everyone. Thank you for joining us here on World News.
Throat, a thorn in his the climatic variety in each of its regions. This time, the lavender fields of North Khorasan province have invited us so that we could discover a part of natural beauties in northeastern Iran.
The land of a thousand colors, with a wild and vibrant nature, where kings and poets have been inspired by its beauties throughout the ages. A place where fountains keep the rivers flowing like the never-ending tales of Shahrazad in the 1,000 Nights and a Night.
From some of the most arid deserts in the world, the habitat of the Iranian cheetah, to the greenest forests, pastures, and valleys, North Khorasan has it all. Here at the Baba Aman Forest Park, the combination of rivers, waterfalls, and the umbrella of sycamore trees have all created one of the most popular summer hideouts for the people in the region.
There are a number of forest parks in North Khorasan, and Baba Aman is one of the popular ones. In spring and summer, Baba Aman hosts the largest number of visitors. At first sight, the place resembles an oasis. What greets you here upon your arrival is the cool, gentle breeze that touches your face. The symphony of the flowing river and the terraced ponds in the middle of the park complete this good feeling. But our trip to North Khorasan is not all about nature. In this amazing region of Iran, there is a little town which could be considered unique, at least in Iran and its surrounding countries. The exceptional feature of this place unveils itself after a short drive in the town's only boulevard.
We have come to a little town in northeast Iran, a town with only 12,000 inhabitants. What is interesting about it is that it has more than 170 shops that only sell dried nuts and dried snacks, such as kashk. It's a combination of dried curd and herbs and spices. Wow, it's kind of hard, but it's so tasty. Let's get inside and have a look.
Welcome to Faruj, the region's trade hub for dried nuts, trail mixes, and you name it.
One of the things that makes North Khorasan exceptionally beautiful is its untouched natural environment. Many believe that this region could be one of the main destinations for ecotourists in the near future. A few kilometers from the city of Shirvan, a village known as Gelian testifies to this fact.
We head towards a hidden paradise in Iran's northeast. Gelian, also known as Golian, is one of the 365 outstanding tourist villages of Iran. With a population of no more than 700, the inhabitants of this picturesque mountainous area are mainly engaged in farming and animal husbandry. Gelian is situated in a valley. The terraced structure of the village and its adobe buildings, along with very tall trees, are only some of the interesting features of this place. Some people believe that if you're born in Iran and spend an entire lifetime traveling across this country, you still wouldn't be able to see all the beauties of this ancient land. This may be true, but seeing at least a part of beautiful Iran would still be worth it. Amir Mehdi Kazemi for Iran.
Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB Turkish Radio.
The Ocean of Dua.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, brothers and sisters in faith, dear listeners of RIB English Radio. You're listening to The Ocean of Dua. In the recent episodes of this program, we've been discussing and analyzing the supplication of Sabah. Let's listen to a passage of this dua and we'll be right back.
نزق الخرق مني بأزمة القنوط إلهي إن لم تبتدئني الرحمة منك بحسن التوفيق فمن السالك بي إليك في واضح الطريق وإن أسلمتني أناتك لقائد الأمل والمنى فمن المقيل عثراتي من كبوات الهوى.
Okay, the passage that we just listened to states, وَأَدِّبِ اللَّهُمَّ نَزَقَ الْخُرْقِ مِنِّي بِأَزِمَّةِ الْقُنُوعِ. Chastise, O Allah, the recklessness of my clumsiness with the reins of contentment. We human beings, if we are left to our own devices, we don't know what's going to happen. We will probably do anything. We will become reckless. And that is why Amirul Mu'mineen here is requesting Allah that He controls, He puts the reins of contentment on him. And on, of course, this is for whoever is reciting this beautiful supplication. We want Allah to control us. We want to be content. The human being has a tendency to want more and more, and he's never satisfied. This is a really big problem that we human beings have. It's like if we are given wealth, we're not satisfied. We want more and more and more and more. But this is not good. At least in the material sense, we have to be content. We have to try to become content. And we should not, want more and more material things and wealth and, things that are, they're not good for our hereafter. And especially if they are obtained through unlawful means. At least in the material sense, we have to be content. In the spiritual sense, the sky is the limit, really. We can just become better and better and better, and there's no reason to become content when it comes to spirituality. But here, most probably, Amirul Mu'mineen is talking about the clumsiness, the recklessness that we human beings have due to our desire for more material gains. The next passage reads, إلهي إن لم تبتدئني الرحمة منك بحسن التوفيق فمن السالك بي إليك في واضح الطريق. Just how beautiful these words are, and just the music of this supplication is astounding, really. And, when you are reciting this supplication, you should not think that, you will get what you want and it's finished by just reciting it once or twice or thrice, okay? No, this supplication is something that should be maintained. You should be consistent in reciting this supplication. You should recite it every single day. You should make it a part of your routine. you should make it a daily habit. Why? Because it gives you a peace of mind. It has so many spiritual and material benefits. And just imagine just waking up in the morning and like going outside, and you can probably walk somewhere or go to a secluded area like a mountainous area and start reciting these supplications quietly with a nice tone, with a nice melody. إلهي إن لم تبتدئني الرحمة منك بحسن التوفيق فمن السالك بي إليك في واضح الطريق. And you don't need to, the music, it already has the music. If you just recite it with a good voice, automatically you will recite it in a really nice melody. Let's take a break and we'll be right back.
Chastise, O Allah, the recklessness of my clumsiness with the reins of contentment. My God, if mercy from you does not begin with fair success for me, then who can take me to you upon the evident path? In your deliberateness should turn me over to the guide of hope and wishes. Then who will annul my slips from the stumbles of caprice?
Thank you, Allah, now that we're here, feeling so good about all the things that we went through, knowing that God is pleased with us too. It's not so true, and we know we'll be here forever. The feeling is indescribable, knowing that this is our reward.
So what does this passage mean? إلهي إن لم تبتدئني الرحمة منك بحسن التوفيق فمن السالك بي إليك في واضح الطريق. My God, if mercy from you does not begin with fair success for me, then who can take me to you upon the evident path? The key word here, the key phrase is husn al-tawfiq. Husn al-tawfiq means having a good opportunity to do something, and Allah has given you this chance to do that good thing. Okay? So if we are Muslims, it's because of husn al-tawfiq that we have. If we are the Shia of Amir al-Mu'mineen and we are the lovers of the Ahlul Bayt and the Prophet and his Ahlul Bayt, again, it's husn al-tawfiq that Allah has given us. So here, the supplicant is saying that, O Allah, If you had not given me this opportunity, this chance, then I would not be on this path. You are the one who has guided me and put me on this wadih al-tariq, this evident path. Okay, of course, it's a rhetorical question. It's in the form of a rhetorical question, meaning it's a question which its answer is already answered. You don't need to answer the question. Okay, the next passage.
وَإِنْ أَسْلَمَتْنِي أَنَاتُكَ لِقَائِدِ الْأَمَلِ وَالْمُنَى فَمَنِ الْمُقِيلُ عَثَرَاتِ مِنْ كَبَوَاتِ الْهَوَى.
Now these passages, they are two by two. It's like we have the first line and the second line, they are related. You have to look at both lines in order to find out the meaning of the passage. If your deliberateness should turn me over to the guide of hope and wishes, then who will annul my slips from the stumbles of caprice? So again, guys, it's Allah who is helping us to withstand our nafs, to withstand the decoys of Satan, the stratagems of Satan, and the tricks of Satan. If it wasn't for Allah, we would all be destroyed. It is Allah who annuls our slips and the stumbles of our caprice. Hawa means caprice. It means a whim, something that we want all of a sudden, something that is, it's a desire that is based on no sense or like any rationality. Okay, so that's the meaning of Hawa. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of The Ocean of Dua. Until next time, I leave you in the care and protection of Allah Almighty. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
From Washington, they point out drugs here, drugs there. Let's get rid of them. Let's stage a coup. Today, we have an American expert on the subject who has completely different data. So buckle up as we start today's Gringo.
Secretary of State saying that we're very close to a deal in the Middle East.
We've been talking about this Department of War, so we won the First World War, we won the Second World War.
Is he a Mexican-American that is offended by...
A few months ago, I received a video featuring an American living here in Mexico named Jeremy Shepard. I couldn't believe what I was hearing, not just about drugs, but also about geopolitical issues and coups. He hails from the United States, yet he moved to Mexico for reasons that you will learn about today here on Gringo. This is a man who has a deep understanding of the drug situation in the U.S., and is well aware of the actions taken by various American governments around the globe.
This video depicts a high-ranking Chinese official seeking stability amidst a turbulent situation. Throughout his life, this man has honestly risen to a prominent position. But he now realizes that no matter how high his status, it is not enough to shield his family from the terror that surrounds them. He yearns to take control of his destiny and find a way to save his family and the achievements he has built. As a result, he makes the difficult yet crucial decision to securely reach out to the CIA. This video is produced by the CIA. It serves as a perfect example of how US interference is orchestrated around the globe. It's in Chinese and its aim is for the Chinese to see it. The goal is to encourage them to join the United States, to betray the Chinese government, to work for the CIA, or at least to spark some doubt about the need for change in their country. It is directed at the people, politicians, and military, and somehow it reaches them. Discussing corruption, terrorism, or drugs to undermine countries from within is always their perfect tool. It is a germ that seeks destabilization, soft coups, military coups, government changes, and alignment with the United States. Coups made in the USA.
And dear friends, it's truly a personal honor and pleasure for me to have the presence of a gringo here in the Gringo studio. A gringo named Jeremy Shepard. He is a communicator, and I would love for him to introduce himself because he has a very unique story. I'm really glad you came here to the Gringo studio, and I say that from the heart. Once one of my sons told me, "You have to watch this video. You have to watch this video." And eventually, I watched a video from his YouTube channel called Intervenciones Gringas, Gringo Interventions. And I was genuinely impressed. And now our production team has invited him here, and it fills me with joy. How are you? Who are you, if you would like to tell the audience?
Well, I think you've already said everything relevant, even some things more beautifully than I would have said. And from what I've seen in your videos, you know everything.
No, I mean, you have knowledge from what I have seen in your videos about coups, about American interventions around the world, and about drugs. In other words, you are an iconoclast, as they say.
Iconoclast it is.
Yes, you are an iconoclast. This is quite significant in a world where humanity has been establishing ideas and creating internal narratives. It's very challenging for people to inform themselves against their own beliefs.
Yes, what you mentioned about all the coups and so on. Honestly, even after looking into that, I still get surprised by one. I usually hear from around that, for example, in the 1800s, these things were absent, but you know what? I do some research and wow, the more you dig, the more you find. We all know the history that we were taught in school. It shouldn't be shocking that, oh, they did some really terrible things in Vietnam, because you kind of already knew that. But many, even those who lived through the 80s and the dirty wars in Latin America, say, oh, but that was the decade when we had no war, because the news weren't covering it. I mean, in the 70s, the news were there, in the 90s, they presented it like a video game. While they were destroying public infrastructure, things like water purification systems, they would say it was military target.
Blanco military.
Well, Jeremy, what happened to you that makes you not a typical American?
Well, I would love to lie and say, no, no, there are more of us. But you see, the situation in my country is what it is.
There are very few of them indeed.
So it's like, okay, there are indeed many people who didn't go out to vote because they realize that this whole thing we do is like a theater. Ah, this is when you can express your opinions. Do you want Trump or Trump Lite?
Who decides on coups, overthrows, and interventions in other countries? Is it the CIA, the National Security Agency, the Pentagon, or a combination of all of them?
La CIA, National Security Agency.
Lungas, there's in fact something like naval intelligence. I mean, supposedly the idea behind forming the CIA in the 40s was to bring together all these different departments into one central place. And then it's like, oh, what if we created about 25 new agencies that essentially do the same thing? So honestly, I don't understand why they have a CIA, DIA, when they all basically perform the same tasks, including the dirty work we talk about, which in English is referred to as wet work, right, like dirty jobs. These are almost never the ones that can be identified as, you know, people, they're more like assets, right?
In other words, there are several factors that make the decisions, right? Obviously, it's not just the president alone. He is merely the figurehead placed there, but there are others behind the scenes. Nixon, during his time, initiated this so-called war on drugs, which has proven to be not only a failure, but also misleading, right?
Well, I believe it wasn't a failure. It did exactly what it was designed to do, which is to imprison more people, specifically more African Americans. Because if we look at it in the terms they use, like, oh, we're going to eliminate drugs, while not only was it a failure, but it actually increased the amount of drugs and more porous and cheaper and in more parts of the country and the world, right? But then, okay, how is it possible that with so much money and resources, and after having nearly 50 or 60 years in this war, why do they lose every battle? And it's like, because it was never really about the damn drugs, drugs are just an excuse. I mean, this Lee Atwater, one of the advisors in Reagan's office, I can't remember if he was the secretary of this or that, but he explained it very well, that it has to be this way, basically on purpose.
You said the drugs thing is just an excuse.
Specifically he mentioned that, we associate marijuana with black individuals, and we associate, or rather, heroin more with them and marijuana with hippies. And we can arrest them whenever we want and say, they had such and such drug on them, and okay, maybe that's true, maybe not, but all right. But the big question is, like, where do all these drugs come from? Because there isn't, like, a poppy field in the United States, I mean, it just doesn't exist, and there aren't coca leaves in the mountains of Denver, you know? Everything has to come from really far away, and it's like, and the hippies, and I mean, back in that time, right? Like jazz musicians, and so on, because it was the 40s, they were importing these things in quantities. I mean, enough to supply so many cities. I mean, for all the addicts you see in the United States, you think, okay, and how many drugs does that person consume? The amount is reported as way bigger. So you shouldn't be surprised when you hear stories. They were bringing in planes like tons per week, and you say tons. And you hear, yes, that's how much the demand is.
Well, right now, with Venezuela, the cartel of the Suns, unlike Colombia, there it is. The president is accused anyway. I'm not saying there aren't situations in those countries. That's true. But in the end, the point is that the excuse was very clear. I mean, what is it?
You should never label him as a drug trafficker because, well, he's my friend, so he can't be bad, right? I mean, this standard applies because Venezuela in 94, before Chavez, was a very different country back then, right? There was a general who got arrested for carrying drugs in a suitcase, right? A briefcase, that's what they say. And then they said, oh, we had to let him go because it was politically sensitive. Why? Because he's your friend. On the other hand, if this poor guy has no influence, not a friend, then you simply throw him in jail. This is a clear example. I mean, this is how they did it with Garcia Luna, right? And I know this is a case from a while ago. So as you see, corruption has reached a very high level in Mexico, but then how do the drug traffickers bring it to all these cities? and so on in such large quantities. I mean, they never stop them. Like, they never stop the trucks that bring 8 tons of cocaine.
I have always said in my discussions that in the game of drug trafficking, much like in chess, we shouldn't focus on pawns, knights, rooks, queens, kings, or bishops. Instead, we should pay attention to those who are moving the chess pieces. Here I feel a need to mention that Jeremy, as he has allowed me to address this topic since he has spoken about it publicly, had a near-death experience with drug use. After leaving the United States, you came to Mexico for rehabilitation. Is that correct? Well, based on that experience you went through, what can you share with the audience who are always pointing fingers, saying, we need to check it ourselves, we should test it, when there are many people in political power who even consume cocaine and such?
Yeah, that's quite noticeable.
Yeah, noticeable.
From miles away, right? Well, actually, this is like a joke I have because I talk about that. I mean, I always believe that my personal life is the least interesting thing my channel can discuss. So if I include it in something like this, it's like in the end, quick, and so on.
But you have an experience. You embodied an experience, and that's what you share.
You've watched the video all the way to the end, while many others don't. Then, as you mentioned, yes, I was addicted to heroin 6 years ago, right? And people are like, oh, really? Then someone in the chat says, what, go home, you never finished the video. It's just that I didn't want to start with that. I wanted to begin with, look, this is the story of why I started researching it, because I was genuinely curious about why there's so much of that drug in my country, especially when we're there in places like Vietnam and Afghanistan. Well, we were actually in these places for help, well, Kuomintang, like the nationalist Chinese who were in exile in what is now Myanmar or another place. I mean, what's going on? Suddenly, so much heroin is coming from high poverty to the United States. It's like, there seems to be a pattern, doesn't it? So we have officially ended the war in Afghanistan. Or rather, it lasted 20 years and now they're out. I honestly thought it would take more than just 24 hours. But no, it feels like it should be some sort of record for the Guinness Book, right? But after that, it was like, oh, now we have synthetic opioids, which are the new trend. A lot of people are importing fentanyl and other substances from various places, and when they want to place blame, they point fingers at Mexico or China. It's like, yes, it seems to come from multiple sources, but the customers are always you, right? And at what point do you stop pointing fingers and say, oh, you are a bad person for selling drugs?
Do you think Donald Trump is going to invade Mexico?
Honestly, I hope not, because I live here. I mean, this is where all my belongings are. But I don't think so. I mean, the truth is, yes, the United States has come to Mexico for quite a while, like 3 major attempts, and 2 of them were complete failures. Yet they declared victory afterward, like a victory in the mission to capture Pancho Villa, even though they didn't catch him. It was a victory, that's how they teach us, but in fact, it sounds like they didn't catch him.
So why all this theatrics? Why all this drama? Well, for me, you know that it has taken a lot of reading and hard work to get to this understanding. But you have an experience within the United States. For instance, right now, the excuse about Venezuelan oil, the situation with Mexico, the control of what migration. In other words, that narrative about drugs and the bad guys is used, and many people believe it.
It was mucho más grande negocio que cualquier droga.
Oil is a much bigger business than any drug, and they really want to have control on it. For instance, the oil in Venezuela has a lot of sulfur and so on. They refer to it as heavy oil instead of sweet oil, which comes out more refined. They say, oh yes, we have the technology to refine that, but we won't build a refinery for it here. Instead, we'll take it to our refinery in California, where all the technology is our property. So you have to sign something stating that you won't disclose to anyone, like an engineer, what you saw here. So it's like, okay, this is the same old neocolonialism where raw materials are extracted and then, finished products are imported, right? But in this situation, your entire economy relies on that, and if you can't refine it, it becomes worth significantly less. I mean, you can still sell it. Let's say sanctions are imposed on countries that buy from you, but you can at least try to sell it, although you'll have to accept just 10% of the price. It's like having a button you can press to. What Nixon and Kissinger said about Chile was to make the economy scream, you know? And this was the note they wrote, right? Like, this is important. I mean, in 2019, we saw an example of this. Like, I can't even describe it as an attempted coup, right? Because that attempt was so so sad.
However, your personal experience with drugs inspired you to comprehend everything you later share in your videos about the struggles and interventions. Here in Mexico, we have a National Museum of Interventions in Churubusco. Have you been there?
Well, yes, it's been around 9 years.
So why did you decide to come to Mexico?
I hadn't actually decided to move to Mexico, but I felt the need to leave the country. So I started looking for jobs here, as well as in a few other Latin American countries and some in Asia. Mexico reached out to me first, and I thought, okay, I'll go to Mexico. It will be temporary. Maybe I'll spend 6 months there and then move on to another country or who knows what. That was 10 years ago, and I came here and just stayed.
And here you are. How do you see Mexico at this moment? How?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, the truth is, living in Querétaro is a bit different because, you know, I just came back today. I used to live here in Mexico City before, and coming back feels completely different, right? And I think we often get stuck in a bubble, like when you live in the capital and you surround yourself with other people who might have more.
But did you feel better, humanly speaking, here in Mexico?
Oh, yes.
You're not the only one. Look, there's a book that I can't quite remember the author of right now. I mean, the book is called Twilight of the American Culture.
I think I've seen the title before, but I can't remember the author.
Norman, I think. Maybe not. Anyway, he said, I'm leaving the United States, and he came to Mexico, and here in Mexico he underwent surgery and says, I found the solidarity that couldn't find back there. Not even my neighbors greeted me. In other words, there are many Americans who have come here in search of the soul, the lost spirit, because over there everything is about money, money, cash, cash, drugs, drugs, everywhere, right?
Yes, the truth is, and it's in useful ways that if you grow up there, live there, you don't realize that, hey, we're the only country that does this. And I mean, what has always struck me as funny is when we give money to others like Ukraine or Israel to support all the things their regimes have to pay for. And one of those is socialized health insurance, so that everyone can see a doctor, even if they don't have money. And yet, we can pay for that in other countries for the people there, but we can't do it for ourselves. It's like, why don't we have that? Why don't we have guaranteed maternity leave? Why not? And it's like other countries then say, this is the freest and most civilized country, while all the others are like, you know, putting shoes on a dog, saying, oh, we're superior, and so on, right?
We could chat with you for a long time, no doubt about it, but look, our program time has already run out. Is there something you would like to share regarding this topic and the interventions of Americans from the United States? Surely you know a lot about it.
You can never send an army of just Americans without any local collaborators and expect to do things your way. For instance, we saw 500,000 people in Vietnam, yet it didn't change the Vietnamese government. In the end, they were overthrown, but take Guatemala as an example, a smaller country where only about 400 people were sent from the United States. The rest were individuals with significant ambitions in the military, people who owned a lot of property and didn't want to lose their money. These were the people in the country who said, yes, we will help you eliminate this government. And it's not like we should tell everyone in Latin America, hey, don't be like that, but if you never cooperate with the empire, it's not that they'll never invade you, they'll never occupy you. However, they do lose. But when someone from the country, along with many outsiders, decides to cooperate with them, believing they have our interests at heart, that's when things really go wrong, right? So, I don't know, don't trust the United States.